now it's locked on Heat. Biscayne, South Beach. Goldberg and Ramil. Talking Heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on Heat. Got it locked on Heat. Always locked on Heat. Keep it locked on Heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on Heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, writer for the Step Back and Miami Heat Tip Off Mag. I'm here as always with credentialed NBA writer David Ramil. Today, we are going to open up the mailbag to answer your questions and talk about Goran Dragic being recognized for his impressive week. But we're going to start with the news that former Heat assistant coach David Fizdale has been fired as head coach by the Memphis Grizzlies. David, what was your reaction when you heard this?
Well, we heard some scuttlebutt coming out of Memphis following a loss to the Brooklyn Nets on Sunday, where Marc Gasol had been benched during the fourth quarter of play and made it pretty well known that he was unhappy with the decision. He had played poorly all game. Fizdale made the choice after the game. He spoke about the benching and said he just wanted to go with his reserves. Gasol didn't like the explanation, basically aired his complaints out to the media, saying this was a first for him, that he wasn't really happy about the way things had gone down. And then we started seeing, you know, information trickling in here and there that apparently their relationship had soured, possibly since the summer, that they'd had several confrontations during practices since the summer, and they kind of just boiled over recently with that benching on Sunday. So as far as the news and my reaction to it, I was surprised, because everything I thought I'd heard out of Memphis and from the front office and the players is that Fizdale was respected. He seemed like the kind of guy who was able to get along really well with players while he was in Miami. I thought that had carried over to his tenure in Memphis. The Grizzlies have lost 8 in a row, but they've also lost Mike Conley during those 8 games, so it's not surprising that they lose possibly their best player and then go on a losing streak that coincides with that. So I don't know how much of that had to do with Gasol, how much of that had to do with Conley, or if any of it had to do with Fizdale. Again, I was just mostly surprised that somebody who I thought had a good pulse for the locker room when he was in Miami, a guy that I thought got along with everybody, guys like Hassan, LeBron James, everybody. You even saw tweeted out comments from LeBron James and Dwayne Wade after the firing became public, kind of saying, you know, we need more of an explanation for this because this doesn't seem right. A guy like Fizdale should never have gotten canned like that by the Memphis front office. So it was surprising, and I'm curious to see what happens next with that front office and with Fizdale himself.
I think it's surprising because it just doesn't seem like the punishment meets the crime. You know, players get upset about their roles on a team, and they'll voice complaints to the media about, hey, I shouldn't have been benched here and there. I should have got the ball more. I should have got more touches, whatever it might be. And usually that'll go over. Maybe you have a players-only meeting. I don't know. Rarely does a comment like that result in firing a head coach. And I would say that there must be something behind the scenes that we don't know is happening, right? Like there must be something, like you said, that stems from something over the summer or something. And I would usually say that that's probably true. But the Grizzlies, I don't know. I do feel like they don't have the most patience for head coaches. I feel like Chris Walls, the general manager there, has a little bit of a short string with his head coaches. Like, he fired Lionel. I'm not sure if Chris Wallace fired Lionel Hollins.
Yeah, I think he'd been there during the Hollins.
He was
tenure.
Okay. So he fired Lionel Hollins, who was a good coach for them. He had success there. I mean, I get it. Like, maybe you're trying to, you know, make the Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr move, where, you know, maybe you think that you need an upgrade there in order to take your team to the next level. And I get that. And they bring in Dave Yeager. Yeager, he forces his way out of Memphis. He had enough with whatever was happening there. So much so that he went to the Sacramento Kings, of all teams. Like, he left Memphis for Sacramento. He was like, this is better for me.
That is a good point.
And he's a good coach. And he did a good job in Memphis. He's doing fine in Sacramento. Fizdale, for all we thought, you know, watching him, you know, as people who are watching the Heat every single game, you see his relationship with the players and just the way that Eric Spoelstra talked about him. And when he was hired by Memphis, it was just, like, widely lauded as a great move. I mean, just people all on the league, oh, this was the guy. He was just waiting for his next head. He was getting offers. He was waiting for the right gig. I think Fizdale put himself in the bad situation because I don't know that Memphis really knows what they're doing. I really don't, because behind all of the success they've had, and we know that Marc Gasol and Mike Conley have been underrated for years, and I really do feel like it was those two guys that really care, and just the happening to have decent coaches and roles for that time that kind of carried that team to some sort of success. I think that's the reason that we look at Memphis as we consider it kind of like a stable team, just because they've had so many of the key guys there for a long time as far as players are concerned. And you think about grit and grind and all that, we look at it, okay, this is a stable organization. I don't think it is. I think that Gasol and Conley are so great that they have given that impression. I think that this front office is a mess. I don't think they know what they're doing, and they're just blessed to have Gasol and Conley in the first place.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, they've you know been underrated for so long, they might just actually be so good that they're just keeping everything afloat and we're not privy to it. But they have lost a number of players. You know, they signed, you know, Chandler Parsons a couple seasons ago. Obviously, that's been a tough decision for them because his health is always a question. Now, they've gotten some solid play out of Tyreek Evans, but they also lost, you know, Zebo in the offseason. They lost Vince Carter, two of them being veteran presences. And look, interestingly enough, following Jaeger to Sacramento, you know, so there has to have been something there with that connection to that coach. But I guess, I don't know, because Marc Gasol never struck me as being that kind of a petulant player. But it seems like he was obviously angry about that, and the front office listened to his concerns. And again, if this has been something stemming from months ago, it's been boiling over, and I guess the front office decided to listen to it. But, you know, it's hard to say whether or not a player or a coach should have more influence there. You know, a coach is supposed to do whatever he can to maximize the players that he's given. And unfortunately, those relationships just deteriorate to a certain point where you're not going to get the most out of those players. And I guess a front office has to decide what's easier to do, trade a player or fire a coach. And I guess they made it.
I'm not sure Fizdale is a great coach. I'm not saying he's not. We don't know that he is, right? Like, Memphis isn't good this year, but they're a team within transition. They hire Fizdale in order to switch from grit and grind. There was a concerted effort and a change in direction of that team. They said, we don't want to be grit and grind anymore. We want to be more modern. We're going to hire Fizdale, who knows how to do this, because he's coming from the Heat, and they have basically turned this pace and space thing into what is in vogue right now in the NBA. And so they do that, and they don't have the patience enough to recognize that it's going to take time, that you have to lose guys that were so important to your team, like Zebo and Vince Carter and Tony Allen, and you have to train guys like a slowpoke player like Mike Conley and a low post player like Marc Gasol, who you've trained to take threes within half a season he was taking them. And they didn't have enough patience to recognize that was going to take time. But all in all, he's gone. And now he's available. He's going to get paid, I guess, $3 million more for the rest of the season that Memphis owes him. And I wonder if he's going to just look to cash that in and watch the rest of the league from the sideline or from his couch. Or does he want to go find an assistant coaching job? Would the Miami Heat think about bringing him back? I wonder. You know, it might be an interesting move.
I think the Heat would bring him back, although I'm not sure that that's something that they should do. I think just like with players and whenever you make a change in a roster, I think it always upsets a delicate balance that has been crafted over time. And I think that's probably something that works out as well in the front office, although there is a level of consistency there. I mean, everybody that's with the team was with a team prior to Fizdale joining the Grizzlies. So it's not like he would be, you know, rocking the boat all that much. But I'm not sure, you know, he would come in there and all of a sudden either Quinn or Dan Craig would start to feel like maybe, you know, they're not as important or as valued by Spoelstra. Maybe Juwan Howard starts to question what his role on the team is. It's like everybody's been moved along this chain here for a reason. Yeah. And then bringing Fizdale back feels kind of short-sighted. Like, you know, just to fill in somebody that's there. I don't know. You know, the Heat is unusual in that sense. I don't think this has ever happened before. So I'm curious to see whether or not they could just say, look, he's part of the family. If he wants back, he'll be back, and we'll all accommodate accordingly.
You can bring him back into like an advisory role, advisor to the team, not necessarily on the head coaching, on the coaching staff.
That's possible. You hinted at whether or not he'd want to take a sabbatical maybe and kind of analyze things from the couch or whatever. We've seen a number of coaches, Tom Thibodeau, I think, yeah. Randy Whitman. Randy Whitman's with the Magic now in somewhat of an advisory role. I don't know that he's actually doing anything. I haven't seen him around much. But, you know, these coaches that get fired, they kind of go around and they meet with other coaching staffs. Yeah. They go to all sorts of different teams, kind of pick their brains a little bit. I wonder if he'll, you know, take that. Because, you know, one of the things that became obvious was that he had waited a long time for a head coaching position, as you hinted at. You know, he was one of those guys that was – up and coming and supposed to be slated for a head coaching gig for years. It seemed like it was like he was rumored to be the top candidate for a number of positions, and he either didn't get the position, didn't feel comfortable perhaps interviewing for the position, finally felt comfortable enough going after the Grizzlies job, was, you know, glowingly recommended by Spoelstra and the Heat front office, and it worked out for him, and unfortunately the job just didn't stick around. He just couldn't
run with two best locations for him. They're impossible spots, but here are the best landing spots. They won't happen, but they should happen. All right. Won't happen, but should happen. First one is the Cavs should fire Ty Lue and hire David Fizdale. Great relationship with LeBron. Ty Lue's not a good coach. Like, that's not debatable, right? Like, he's just not good at it. David Fizdale is good, and so they should upgrade. Okay? That won't happen, should happen. Second one that won't happen, but should happen. I know that they've already announced that John Crotty is going to be the guy.
Oh, God.
But Fizdale is color commentator? And I know it won't be for that long. A year, maybe max. But it's not like Crotty's going anywhere. So just give him a year. Let him pull the Steve Kerr thing. He could travel to every team in the league. He can watch and analyze. His homework would literally be studying other teams. He'd be incredible at it. Like, take that for data could be his catchphrase. Like, it's all laid out there. It's perfect. David Fizdale as the color guy next to Eric Reed is the dream scenario. And I know it won't happen because the Heat have already basically given it to Crotty. But holy crap, would that be an awesome idea?
I don't think so.
You don't like the idea?
I don't think Fizdale is qualified in any way, shape, or form to be a color commentator. Look, he'd give great insight. What? He might be a good third person.
Is he less qualified than Tony Fiorentino?
Well, at least, if nothing else, Fiorentino's done it for, you know, 20 years or something like that. So those are his qualifications. And, well, he knows all of Mount Vernon and...
you know. I can't believe you're saying this. I thought you were going to love this.
No, it's a monkey wrench. I really did not see that one coming whatsoever. But I don't know that Fizdale feels comfortable. I feel like he's too much of a coach. I think he's just gonna, you know, swear or on camera. You know, that's not gonna be well liked by the Heat.
He won't swear on camera. He's got enough discipline.
All right, maybe. Man, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Why not? Right. Sorry, I talked to Crotty.
I'm not looking forward to Crotty at all. He's good on radio, but he's just not different. I think you need – Fizdale has got a fiery edge to him. I want that. He's been coaching. He's been in the league, like literally. Like yesterday, he was in the league. All right. Next, we're going to get to your mailbag questions. But first, Locked On Heat still has some inventory for sponsorships for this season. This is a great, affordable way for local South Florida businesses to connect and engage with Heat fans. Traditional advertising doesn't work the way it used to. If you've tried it, you already know this. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with sponsors. Our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so you get the most bang for your buck. For more information, you can email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. All right, later we're going to talk about Goran Dragic's big week and his recognition, but not before we open up the mailbag. So our first question comes from Chris Leach. He says, recently it seems like we're seeing more and more flashes from Justice Winslow. Have the Heat changed anything, or is it just a factor of the team figuring things out and acclimating to having him in the lineup? I love the confidence and aggressiveness he is showing at times. What do you think, David?
It's a good question. I'd have to say the most weak answer possible, that it's probably a little bit of both. We tend to look at Winslow and always hope that he'll turn out to be an all-star player right away, but he's still so young. He missed almost all of last season, and we assumed that he would be able to come in and inject something right away into the offense, and unfortunately that wasn't the case. But he is starting to show some promise and some of those flashes that Chris talked about. So I think that there's probably a little bit more of a comfort level there, an understanding that this is what he does best, and then putting him in those situations where he can do what he does best. But I also think there's something on his end as well, an understanding that, I don't have much more time to show what I can do. If I'm not shooting well, this is where I flourish, and bringing the ball up the court, dishing it out to teammates, creating plays and facilitating offense. This is my bailiwick. This is where my wheelhouse. And for me to show those off becomes imperative, because right now I'm in my third season and I need to be able to do so, because look, let's be honest, there's a contract waiting at the end of next season for him if he plays to a certain level, and he needs to start showing that kind of productive ability consistently, because we haven't seen it because of the injury, because he was just slated for a particular role his rookie season. So I think it's a little bit of both. What do you think?
I looked up the stats. Look, it has also struck me as well that it looks like the Heat are using Winslow in a better way the last three games, I would say, really, during this three-game win streak that they've kind of strung together here. And that's been the eye test, and I've noticed that, and I get where Chris is coming from in this question. I looked at the stats, and his usage rating hasn't increased at all. His touches per game have barely increased. His average for the season is 44.4 touches per game, which is about average for a wing player. In the last three games, it's 47 per game. Not a big difference, only about 2.5 more touches per game, so not a big difference. The numbers don't back it up. He's shooting better, obviously. That's fine. From the field, he's 2 for 5 against Chicago, 2 for 3 against Minnesota, 4 of 6 against Boston. So, I mean, to say he's shooting better, it was 40%, 67%, and 67%. That's better than his average for the season, but which is 44%. But the stats don't back it up. So the eye test says he looks more comfortable. The eye test says that he's making a few more impact plays. I think, he's made some really nice passes. Defensively, he's been making so many quote-unquote winning plays on the defensive end. He's been playing the best basketball of his season so far. The numbers aren't backing it up. I wonder if the numbers haven't caught up yet, if that makes sense. Maybe as he starts to play more and more like this, he'll start having more breakout games. We'll start seeing the scoring start maybe come along with it. But he's playing great, and he does look more comfortable. I think the Heat have given him the ball more than they've given to Josh Richardson. I haven't crunched all the numbers. I know that he's not getting the ball more often than he usually is, but I think it's less often in the hands of guys like Waiters and Josh Richardson and James Johnson, and more really in Goran Dragic's hands. And then it looks like, because of that, Winslow's getting the ball a little bit more maybe. That's my best guess at this point. But he looks better. He looks better, and I think that's what's important here.
So when you're saying the numbers don't back it up, though, it's just, he's being more effective, but he's not having like a huge breakout or anything like that. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, like he hasn't had like a 20-point game, and then just going deeper, like his usage rating hasn't increased. It's actually decreased in the last three games. I mean, his usage rating in the last three games is 14.7, 13.4, and 12.5. Before that, it was 15, 25, 18, 15. It was all higher than that.
Doesn't that speak to kind of figuring out how to use him more effectively, where you don't have to use him more often because that puts him in a bad spot? Like, that was the problem, I think, or one of the things that we've talked about before at the start of last year, is that he had the ball in his hands so much, he didn't know what the hell to do with it. It was an uncomfortable role for him to be in, and it wasn't one that he played effectively in. In fact, he played really ineffectively in that position. So maybe kind of the same way that we look at Whiteside as a really good tertiary scorer on this offense, maybe Justice is a guy who can't handle the ball all that much just in certain spots, but when he does, he's much more efficient and effective as it.
Look, I mean, I agree. Like, that's what I see when I'm watching the games. But you look at these advanced stats. I mean, his assist percentage isn't better. His turnover percentage isn't better. His offensive rating by game isn't better. His defensive rating by game isn't markedly better. His basketball reference has a thing called game score, which kind of takes all these things into consideration. That's not better. None of it is improved, but he looks better. Like, he looks like he's just better. He's playing better. And Eric Spoelstra will say things all the time like, you know, he does a lot of things that don't show up in a box score. And maybe that's what's happening here. Maybe that's some of the case. You'd still maybe see some of that trickle in offensive rating and defensive rating, which I'm not really. He had an offensive rating of 128 versus Minnesota, which is his third best of the season. It's phenomenal. But outside of that, I don't really see anything that just kind of leaps out from the box score. But again, I don't want to rely on the box score. I think we're going to see some of it reflect in the box score as long as he starts playing this way. And I think he will. I'm going to trust my eyes on this. And he looks more comfortable, and I think the Heat are trusting him more, and he's just playing better right now. Does he look like he's playing better to you?
I think so. Yeah, he just seems comfortable in doing what he does. I don't see him kind of taking on too much. He's found a really comfortable balance between defending a number of players, and then when he has the ball in his hands, just knowing what to do with it and not looking apprehensive and not, you know, forcing up a bad shot. I mean, even just like little things, like athletically, he seems like he's got more spring. Like, he pulled off a dunk, I think, against Chicago that I didn't think he was capable of, to be honest with you. I mean, not just the spin move that we talked about in yesterday's podcast, but there have been other examples like this. You know, little things, physical things that I wasn't sure he was going to be able to do this season, and he's done them much more consistently. I think he looks great, to be honest with you. If we had talked about the start of the season, before maybe even the preseason, and said, look, I'll get you Justice Winslow out there for, you know, 23 minutes per game, shooting 44% and 33.3% from three-point range, that would probably be something that we'd be okay with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to see his scoring numbers tick up a little bit more, but I do feel like he's been a little bit more aggressive getting to the rim and things like that. He's starting to, and that's why I think the box score will start to reflect it, is because I think he is looking for his own shot a little bit more. And that's good. I think the Heat need that, because at any given night, one of these guys can sort of get hot and be that third or fourth guy that the Heat need to kind of get them to a win. And that's how the team's built. That's fine. And Winslow, at some point, he hasn't really been that at all this season. At any point, he's been mostly valuable defensively. At some point, they're going to need him, you know, offensively, to be one of those guys. All right, next question comes from Taylor Monk. Money aside, 22 minutes seems to be the sweet spot for us on Whiteside. He's referencing Miami's win against Chicago when Whiteside basically didn't play for most of the fourth quarter because he was injured. Though I would love for Spo to carve out time for Bam as well. 20 to 24 center minutes for Hassan Whiteside, 16 to 20 minutes for Kelly Olynyk, and 8-ish minutes for Bam Adebayo seems logical to me. So, that's a center breakdown. Bam's not getting any playing time really right now, consistently at least. What do you think, David? Do you think the Heat are better off playing Whiteside less and giving more minutes to Olynyk and Bam?
Yes. Well, not necessarily Bam. I'm not of the mindset that he needs to play right away. He's still so young. I mean, and I think maybe the team is being a little conservative, but I think it's going to behoove him in the long run. And I think that's the kind of patient approach that we need to take as a fan base, is that because the team lacks draft picks and any other way of augmenting their roster with youth and talent, the best thing that we can do is just wait for Bam to develop. And the best way to do that is to take the time to help him grow by helping him. Hey, look, he does need playing time. I understand that. I'm a little surprised he hasn't been sent to the Sky Force. I'm wondering whether or not there are concerns about Whiteside's knee that kind of keeps Adebayo on that roster rather than in Sioux Falls, although, of course, they could bring him back and forth at any point during the season. At least I think so, right? I mean, maybe I'm a little rusty on my G League rules, but can Adebayo go back and forth through the Skyforce?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm fine with Whiteside playing less minutes. I think he probably plays a little bit too much. He needs to be more engaged during the time that he is playing, and I think Olynyk gives him a whole other dimension that Whiteside can't. So I really, I'm very comfortable with Olynyk playing about 20 minutes per game.
I think, you know, as Taylor mentioned, money aside, I've always been on this side. Like, look, you don't have to start Tyler Johnson just because he's one of your highest paid players. You play the person in the most effective way that they're used, and that way they live up to the contract. Sure. I think that's true for us on Whiteside. I think it's also impossible that this coaching staff can get away with playing him for 22 minutes a game. That is basically 11 minutes fewer than his average for the last 2 years. He's typically around that 33-minute per game mark. I don't see how they can get away with it. Whiteside's not going to put up with it, and Whiteside could become a very big problem in that locker room. And as much as we want to admit that a player like Hassan Whiteside, who should just be grateful for his place in the league at this point, could become an issue when it comes to playing time, it's true. He can. And I don't think that they want to risk that. To that point, though, they need to find more minutes for Olynyk. I really think the idea for Olynyk was for him to start at power forward. They have decided that that's not where he's going to be, and he is their backup center now. And he is among Miami's... Like, when he's on the floor, Miami's offense is much better than versus when Whiteside is on the floor or when there's anybody else at center. Kelly Olynyk is just... He is nitrogen, or whatever that thing is, that goes into cars that makes it go fast.
I think everything.
Is it nitrogen? Nas, whatever. Something more so than gasoline. He is that for Miami's offense. That's what he is.
He and sets good screens. He makes good passes.
He sets terrific screens. He likes to take the ball out of his hands and into other people's hands for the betterment of the team.
What a concept.
Look, I'm all for it. I think, look, I'm with you. I don't think Bam needs to play. That's fine. I think Bam might have... There was a spot for Bam to play against Chicago at the end. If Kelly Olynyk and the Heat kept allowing Chicago to get to the rim like they were at the start in the middle part of that fourth quarter, and Olynyk really tightened it up after that, like, credit to Olynyk, but if he hadn't, I think you might have seen Bam come in a little bit because Chicago was just getting anything they wanted, and it was like a 1-2-point game. And that might have been a point where Bam comes in. He offers like that foot speed, and he offers that size and the idea of rim protection that can come and go on any given night, as a rookie is prone to do. But I don't see Bam getting consistent minutes. And like you, I don't think he should get them. I think he's fine where he is. I love the idea. I think it would be perfect. You basically just split the center minutes 50-50 between Whiteside and Kelly Olynyk. I just don't see it happening. I don't think it's going to happen. Maybe you give Whiteside... You take 5 minutes from Whiteside, let him play 28 minutes a game. And then you give those minutes to Kelly Olynyk. Maybe that's an option. Or something like that. But I think that's the idea. If we don't go like raw, if we don't just talk specific numbers, I think they should and maybe will. Because I don't know what the other option is right now to get Kelly Olynyk more playing time. Take a couple minutes from Whiteside and give those to Kelly Olynyk. All right. We got one more question, speaking of Hassan Whiteside. What trade scenario are we looking at for Hassan Whiteside? That comes from David on Twitter. But before we get to that, quick reminder to make sure that you subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, and to leave us a review on iTunes to help other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team, plus Locked On Fantasy Basketball. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. All right, so what do you think, David? What trade scenario are we looking at for Whiteside? We don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but we've been asked a few different times in different ways if the Heat were to trade Whiteside, what would it look like?
I don't think it'll be for Marc Gasol, I can tell you that.
I don't think it would be either. Look, a name that's been out there, the Clippers, are they willing to part with DeAndre Jordan, whose deal is expiring? I think a one-for-one Jordan for Whiteside could make sense. There's already been rumors that the Clippers might want to trade him for Tristan Thompson, and I think there's no doubt that Whiteside's better than Tristan Thompson. They make almost the same amount of money. So maybe that. I personally have been...
Portland? Sorry, Jusuf Nurkić has struggled there. I mean, he's on the last year before he enters restricted free agency, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, Nurkić and salary, or just Nurkić and a couple of nice players for Whiteside. You're not going to get Nurkić and McCollum, but
no.
Nurkić and Mo Harkless plus like Myers Leonard for salary purposes. I don't think that's even value for Whiteside. I think that just... I don't know how many of those guys. I wouldn't touch Myers Leonard right now. I've been flirting with the idea of a 1-for-1 for Harrison Barnes. You send Whiteside to Dallas. Dallas wants a guy like Whiteside. They've wanted a guy like Whiteside since they got rid of Tyson Chandler. Harrison Barnes would answer a need for Miami. You could start him at small forward. Bring Josh Richardson off the bench, where we've discussed on a couple shows ago, that he might be better off that way. And, look, I don't think Harrison Barnes is a ace player by any means. I think he's an inefficient scorer, but he can get his own shot. He can get hot. He's got great size. He can play a couple different positions. Whiteside's not a perfect player either. So you're trading an imperfect player for an imperfect player, but one who would meet a need for Miami, that being depth on the wing and guys who can get their own shot and score, and you're clearing minutes for Kelly Olynyk, and in the future, Bam. So... Those are the trade scenarios I'd look at for Whiteside. But right now, I think you just kind of keep rolling with Whiteside at this point. The starting lineup is starting to get into a groove. I kind of want to see where this is going. If they could carve out more minutes for Kelly Olynyk, I'd be comfortable with where this is at. I will still get frustrated with Whiteside on a game-to-game basis and come on this show and complain about him. But for now, I guess I'm on the record as saying, like, let's just wait this out. Let's see if the Heat can kind of get something going here.
That sounds fair.
Okay.
I'm still kind of floored by the Harrison Barnes suggestion.
Oh.
I'm just mulling it over. I don't know how to accept it. I know you brought it up before in the past, but I guess I just haven't really given it much.
Do you like? Are you like leaning no? Yes. You love it. You hate it.
I'd have to say I'm leaning no.
Okay.
Because although I like Barnes, like I like him personally, and I think he's a smart kid and all that, and I think he could do a lot of nice things here. He's just not great, you know? I know part of the
criticism... But neither is Whiteside, right? Like, it's almost... Absolutely. They're almost, like, right there at that same level. Like, they're both, like, I want to like them, but there's so many reasons why I don't like them. And that's why it's a fair trade.
Yeah, you're right. But at the same time, it's like Whiteside represents such a large part of what Miami does,
yes,
especially defensively and even to an extent offensively as well, that you're giving up so much and getting so little in return.
And that's why I said I probably wouldn't do it. I'd rather just kind of see where this goes. What about White's? Would you at this point, and I know we've brought this up, Jabari Parker?
Yes, because I think Parker's a better player than Harrison Barnes, and I think you're taking a chance even with the injury in the hopes that he can one day become... See, I don't know that Jabari is also a superstar in that sense, that he's going to lead your team. I don't think he's not the kind of guy who's going to carry the team. Like there were struggles there last year even before he got hurt. There was that players-only meeting where he was basically told to shut the hell up. A really smart guy, a very interesting person. I've been lucky enough to speak with him and he was a very, like I said, like a really smart guy, but at the same time, I don't know. I kind of want him in Miami.
I think he's going to be he'll be like a B player on a really good team. Like that's why he's important to Milwaukee, is because he could be like the secondary scorer to Giannis.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly why he's a perfect
role. If they're afraid of, but he's up for an extension, which is why he'd be available in the first place. Otherwise he wouldn't be. If Milwaukee is a little hesitant, we don't know if we want to extend them. Maybe we think Chris Middleton can be our second scorer on a title winning team. We need to shore up this defense somehow.
Is Jabari and Thon McCur too much for Milwaukee to give up for Whiteside?
Yeah, I don't think they'd do it. I think you'd have to take somebody off their hands. I think it would have to be like Jabari, and you take that horrendous John Henson contract off their hands.
Okay, yeah, that's not going to work then.
You wouldn't do it then? I would consider it. I am so scared of Jabari Parker's knees. Like I love him as a player. Like, I think he could, he's the sort of player that you could start to build around. Like, I agree with you. He's probably the second, he's not an all-star. He's not going to carry a franchise.
But he could be like a much less effective Carmelo Anthony, though. That's...
Yeah, I think he's got more potential defensively, and he's not the black hole that Carmelo Anthony was. And let's remember, like, Carmelo Anthony, like, if he was in the right situation, he could have been the second best player on a title-winning team before, yeah, like, things went south.
Not according to Carmelo. According to Carmelo.
Right. Well, there was the whole ego thing. I don't think Parker has that, and you've talked to him more than I've never talked to him. But, yeah, I think
it's a balance of both. Like, I don't think he's the guy who wants to be the star either. So I think he'd be comfortable taking a secondary role.
Yeah. And I think having a guy like that could entice somebody to come over. I mean, if you can get Jabari Parker paired with like a legit all-star player, like a all-star wing or an all-star guard or something like that, that could work. But I don't know. Those are just hypotheticals, which we love here. All right. Let's talk about Goran Dragic and his big recognition. Dragic was named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. It's the third time in his career, but the first time with the Heat. Dragic led the Heat to a 3-0 record. They beat the Celtics, Timberwolves, and the Bulls, during which he was averaging 23.7 points, 4.3 assists, 3.7 rebounds, and he was shooting 52.4% from the floor. 57.9% from three-point range. He's got that. I mean, his stroke has been 11-19. He's been. It's just been on fire, and that's why he was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week. A great honor, first-time honor for Goran Dragic, who we were finally happy is finally getting some of the recognition that you and I have said he's deserved for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the first time he's done it with the Heat, it kind of puts his name out there, right? A 3-0 week certainly solidifies Miami, I guess, as a potential playoff team across the league. Maybe you start to notice, you know, they last season was kind of up and down. Everybody liked what they did in the second half of the season, but I don't think that anybody really saw them as a legitimate playoff contender at the start of this year. Maybe a possible team that could make some noise in the Eastern Conference. I think this kind of solidifies that a little bit more. They knocked off a very good Boston team, had some good wins on the road as well. So, you know, Goran being the team's best player also, I think, helps legitimize him and the team also. You know, you can say, look, this is a guy who's as good as anybody else across the league. You know, with Cleveland playing as well as they have, what have they won, like 6 in a row, 7 in a row, something like that?
Yeah.
And LeBron leading that team and getting them on the right page, the fact that Goran was somehow able to become the Eastern Conference Player of the Week really speaks volumes, I think. So I'm impressed by people voting him into that honor and just his overall performance over the last three games.
And as far as effects for the Heat, I mean, these are the announcements that get sent out to the media, and the media are the people that vote on All-Star games and end of season awards and things like that, and write about it and stuff like that. This gets out there. This can affect All-Star voting, right? These are the sort of things that people, not necessarily take into consideration, but the players get these, you know, recognitions, these weekly recognitions, and people start to take more notice of them.
I saw a tweet today seriously considering whether or not Goran could beat out a number of Eastern Conference guards for an All-Star spot. Something I hadn't seen from anybody other than my own thoughts over the last few weeks, you know, and all of a sudden here a tweet comes out from somebody, an NBA media person, I can't remember who.
And that's the sort of thing that, you know, if he gets his averages up a little bit more to that 20-5 area, he's got a legitimate shot at it. And these are the sort of things that a player needs to do to get to the All-Star game. And you and I, we would really like for Dragic to get to the All-Star game. We think he's an All-Star caliber player. But then more so, look, we know All-Star calls exist. We know that Goran Dragic doesn't get all the foul calls he deserves. I wonder if he were to make the All-Star game all of a sudden, maybe after February, he starts getting a little bit more foul calls. Who knows? Maybe that helps as the Miami Heat make their playoff push. Who knows? Just saying. It's possible. It's out there. But overall, I'm just happy for Goran Dragic because dude deserves it.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Now my signed picture of him is worth more money, I think.
An extra 25 cents in the open market, at least.
At least. All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with a recap of the Heat's game against the Cavaliers. But for now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions for next week to lockedonheat@gmail.com and tweet your comments and questions for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Got it, Wes.